Well, hey there, and we're back. We were talking about not turning around and looking is outdoors this week. Alex Langer, Fish Freck, Robert, and Gary over here, pen guy. We're talking about people that don't look behind them when they're out there fishing. And tarpon fishing, this can get critical. And one of the things is, okay, we're out there. We've got our rig put up, as we described before, 50-pound braid, 60-pound fluorocarbon, 6-aught to 9-aught hook, depending upon the size of bait. We've got a crab on. Cast it out. Perfect cast right in front of the fish. Fish on. What happens?
Chaos. Absolute chaos.
Absolute chaos. Yes.
It's pandemonium.
You're trying to get all...
so exciting.
You're trying to get all your lines in, and it's a fireman's drill.
You're running around the boat. Everybody's going crazy because now all of a sudden you got this fish on. He's peeling line out. And if you're not the guy with the fish on, get your lines up. Get them out of the way. It's their turn. So
get them out of the way. Start going after the fish and keep up with them and keep as much pressure on them until he jumps.
Okay. The jump is usually going to take place fairly early in the fight, your first jump. If you're lucky, this fish is going to launch out of the air, because if you're not, you got a two-hour fight.
Absolutely.
They expend so much energy coming up out of the water, that's going to, every time he jumps, it's 15 minutes off the fight.
Every bit of that.
So he comes up, and you're watching the line. What are you seeing in the line? What's telling you it's going to jump?
The line is actually coming up closer to the surface, kind of going away from you. You know, as the fish is coming up, so is the line. So the line actually perceives like it's going farther away from you, rather
because
than straight
up. Because the fish is going farther away.
But he's coming up towards the surface, so he's dragging the line up with him.
Okay, so you watch
rather
the
than
line
it being vertical straight down below you.
The fish is going away. Okay, so now the line's coming up. What happens? All of a sudden, boom! You see the head come up, and then the body. And I don't know about for you, but my first couple times, I wonder if your brain just does a slow motion thing. I mean,
I think it does. Yeah, I think it does.
It all happens in the blink of an eye, but when this thing first comes up out of the water, you're seeing the white water boil and the fish comes up, and then he's in the air and he does that little kind of twisty thing. He's twisting, you know, and bam, down in the water he goes.
I think it's because we've all seen the videos. You know, with people catching the tarpon and they slow that part down. So maybe our brain just kind of perceives it that way, but it does. It does. The first couple that you catch particularly.
Yeah, those first couple, I mean, and your heart's pounding so fast. I mean, I'm sure you guys know what buck fever is. And buck fever, you know, you're holding the rifle and your hands are shaking, you know. And
absolutely.
Nobody admits to it. But I can tell you, every time you get that the first time you get a tarpon, the rod tip is shaking so hard, it's hard to tell which way the fish is going.
Oh, yeah. I mean, a lot of people look at it and don't think about it while you're fighting the fish. But the spectators that are on the boat watching you fight the fish get to see all that.
And it's cool. It's really cool. So anyway, the fish just comes up. What do you do, Robert?
Drop the rod. Drop the rod.
Take the rod, throw it in the water, drop it to the bottom of the boat. Don't even worry about that rod. Get rid of it.
Well, you got the pen guy here. He's probably got an extra one in his pocket.
Don't drop the rod.
Drop the rod tip.
Lower your rod tip.
The rod tip.
Bow
down.
To the king.
Bow to the king.
Don't throw it in the bottom of the boat, folks. It doesn't work. Yeah. So anyway, the fish comes up. He comes up in the air, and when he does his head shaking, when you're looking at it, you don't see how much area that's taking up, but it's probably about a 2 to 3 foot throw from one side of the arc of his head till he throws his head the other way. And if you've got too much pressure on it, you're going to pull that hook.
Absolutely.
And when he hits the water, if your line's tight, he's going to come down on that leader, going to pull the hook. So you got to create slack in the line by doing, as Robert says, lowering the rod tip, dropping the rod tip. They call it bowing to the king. Yeah. And if you're going to bow to the king, you just get that rod tip, go as close to the water with it in front of you, extend your arms, get as much slack as possible, because this whole thing is going to take place in seconds. No time to open the bail.
I don't even know if it's seconds. It's probably a second.
Microseconds, yeah.
Yeah.
No time to open the bail. No time to do anything. Just get those arms out, get that rod tip down, create some slack so you don't lose that fish. Now he hits the water, and he's gone again. And so what are you doing? You're standing on, you got to be on the bow of the boat, because most of the time you have to chase this fish. We're going to use either the electric or the outboard and follow this fish, but not too much with the boat, because you want him to drag the boat, give the guy on the rod a real good feel for the fight. So don't get crazy following a fish up, only if you're out of line. Right. If you're going through all 300 yards of line and you're seeing the bottom of that spool, now's the time to kick up that motor and get that guy reeling quick.
Absolutely. And, you know, and then while you're doing that the whole time, you've got to keep pressure on the fish the entire time. You want him to drag the boat around. You want him to constantly be putting as much pressure on that line and drag as possible, you know, to wear the fish out and make the fight as short of a time
so
as possible.
So when you're chasing down that fish, make sure you see a bend to the rod. If
always.
You're not, if that rod tip isn't a little bent, A, you don't know what direction it is. The operator of the boat is going to watch the tip of your rod. So don't have that rod pointed at the fish. Get that rod up in the air so you can see that tip bent. That rod should be bowed and bent in the direction the fish is, so the guy running the boat helping you land this fish can follow it. He's pointing direction from that. And then all of a sudden, the line starts getting too close to you. Get back down. I mean, it's nothing when that fish comes up real close. I'm hardcore reverse, spinning the boat one way, spinning the boat the other. Keep the fish in front of the boat. Don't let him get outside of the boat. But we're going to be back with more later, but that's kind of what we do at tarpon here. So I guess it gives you a little of the feel of the tarpon.
Yeah, I think the people get a picture of it. Yeah.
Okay, so we've got a lot of other stuff to talk about and a lot more shows to do. But this is Fish and Frank and Gary from Penn, the one and only Gary from Penn, and world-famous, world-renowned Robert in the chair across from me. Hey there, and I think we're back. Yes, we are. Look at that. We're here. It's Fish and Frank. That's Robert in the chair across from me and Gary, our Penn guy. And there's just nobody like Penn and nobody like Gary. We got really lucky when we got Gary for our rep. We were talking about tarpon, and they're out there battling. They've come up. They've jumped. They've gone down. We're chasing them with the boat, keeping tight lines all the time. What, Robert, what happens when they get up next to the boat?
That's when the real work comes into play, because you've got to keep still the pressure on the fish, but the fish is tired, so sometimes they want to sink down. A lot of times they get a little burst of energy and go under the boat, so you've got to be prepared to run in circles around the boat. You've got to be able to put the rod tip in the water physically.
Okay, so he's on the right side of the boat, he's on the starboard side, and he sounds down, he's real tired, and you've got 150 pounds just going limp, going down in the water, taking a break. And now he starts, gets that burst of energy and goes across under the boat. What do you do?
You've got to put that rod tip in the water as low as you can get it, and then run around the boat to the other side where he's
going
to.
Keeping that rod in the water to get around to the other side of the boat and bring it back up.
Watching for the trolling motor, watching for the outboard, trim tabs, everything, the bottom of the hull. I mean, everything plays a factor into that, so you've got to really be careful with it.
And that's a great part about using those 7.5, 8-foot rods. You can really get it down deep into the water. The trick is you got to clear all that stuff. So keeping that rod tip way down low, way down, keeping that fish pressure on the fish, even though he's really tired. Now you get him back up on the other side, and does the angler grab the leader? What's going on with that?
No, usually either the captain of the boat or one of the other guests that are on the boat that are helping you, basically.
Guest, I mean, thank you for having me. It's a lovely dinner.
Right.
It's nice you have guests on your boat. I'd say the clown on the other side has been sitting there waiting with nothing to do. He hasn't had to fight the fish for 2 hours. Let that goofball get the line. You know, tell somebody else get here and do part of the work.
Yeah, they got to come up and get a hold of the leader and grab a hold of the fish's jaw and hold on tight. You know, because when they, even though they are tired, it's still 150 pounds of pure muscle that shakes you violently next to the boat. And the guy that grabs that fish has got to be committed to it. You can't just go in there lackadaisical about it, because you will break an arm. You will break a nose.
Your nose. People don't understand, but when this fish lunges up out of the water, you want to be on your game, because he's coming right at your face.
Absolutely.
You got 150 pounds of fish looking to give you the worst sloppy kiss you've ever had, and most of the time, he's going to break his nose.
Absolutely. You know, they don't realize how bad that is.
Okay, we're going to be right back in a minute. We're going to be finishing up with the tarpon. We've got a bunch of other stuff to talk about, but tarpon's taking up. Gary's going to be back with us from Penn, and Robert in the chair across from me, Fish and Frank here. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned, guys. We got more stuff coming. More. There's more. It really is. More. So, I like we don't have to sit around and wait through the whole thing, so.
I know, it's really quick. Okay, I've got the other report ready. Hold on 1 second.
All right. world. Hey there. I think that was my cue to come back. I'm still learning how to do this. Newbie. We're just a baby puppy here on Outdoors This Week with Alex Langer. Fish and Frank here in the chair. Robert in the chair across from me. And, of course, Gary from Penn, our special goose star this week. And we're talking about tarpon. We've been fighting him right underneath the boat. He's going one side to the other. He's dragging that rod around the boat. You got to keep moving. Keep on top of this fish because everything is all happening, and it's hard. It's intense. We've grabbed the fish by the jaw. We've got a hold on him. What's happening now, Robert?
Well, when you got him up next to the boat, basically, and you've got him under control, you need to take the time to resuscitate the fish. You know, and resuscitating the fish is a real vital part of tarpon fishing.
And
know?
One thing that makes me crazy, I got to break in with this. You ever see somebody run a marathon and then watch him go at the end of the marathon, have somebody come up, grab him by the shirt front, start shaking him back and forth, going, relax, calm down, shake you, come on, shake him, get him relaxed, get him, calm down. Just hold on to the fish. Let him relax. Don't do this whole back and forth thing. Calm. Yeah. Everything needs to be calm at this sport. Why is it so important they get calm?
Well, you got to calm them down significantly because they have such a large lactic acid buildup. A lot of fish do it, but tarpon in general.
Lactic acid. Tarpon
in general do a huge lactic acid jump or dump along with their adrenaline, basically, and it tightens up every one of their muscles and causes their body, the muscle to
all
lock
the meat
up.
In that fish are just being stone stiff like a board.
Correct. You know, and that fish has no real way at that point to relax.
Yeah, and the funny thing is the anglers probably built up just as much lactic acid trying to stop the thing.
I didn't know I had lactic acid. I'm learning. I got stuff in my body I'm completely unaware of. Well, and I lived through the 70s, so I know there's a lot of stuff in there.
Well, I'm no doctor, but I did stay at a Motel 8 or Holiday Inn or whatever the commercial is. But
yes.
But yeah, I think we build it up too. And, you know, as sore as we are, you know, that fish is probably even
how
maybe
can you help
sore,
avoid so. That as much as possible?
Well, I've always been told that, you know, you try to change direction on the fish with the rod tip. You know, if the fish, once you're, you know, you get through that initial pandemonium, like we said, of the strike, and you're just kind of along for the ride in the beginning, and you get everything kind of worked, and once you're actually fighting the fish, I was always taught to try to change the fish's direction. If he wants to go right, I want to make him go left. If he wants to go left, I want to make him go right. I want to make him sort of uncomfortable. I guess that's not a great word, but
no,
I want to tire him out.
That's exactly what it is. If he's uncomfortable pulling that way, he's going to get a burst of speed and go the other way, and then it's all about tiring that fish out in the right amount of time. I think you're absolutely right. If he's pulling left, pull hard to the right.
Yeah.
No, that's real good. Now, Robert, what does the lactic, whatever that stuff is, you got acid. Now, it's different than the acid I knew back in the 70s, right?
Correct.
Okay, so I didn't do that. No, folks, no, that wasn't me. Keep going, Robert. You can do it.
The lactic acid builds up in their muscles, and they're just locked up. So what you've got to do is you put the boat just barely into gear, and you're facing into the current, preferably, and holding onto that fish in the water. And let's say an average tarpon fight, just for an average, is about 40 minutes.
40 minutes to an hour, yeah.
So you're talking 20 minutes to 30 minutes to resuscitate most of those fish.
Now, to resuscitate, hold them by the jaw. If you have an electric motor, put it on slow and just let the boat run slow with the electric motor. What happens if you don't have an electric motor? Just drift?
No, kick your motor into gear. Just put
as
it
slow
there,
as possible.
Just barely bump it right into gear where you're just slowly moving along. And what you've got to do is really hold a really firm grip onto that fish, because 150 pounds of muscle, that fish is going to kick a few times and you're going to think he's ready, and he is nowhere close to ready.
What happens if you release him too soon?
He sinks right to the bottom and becomes shark meat or crab bait, one of the two.
Yeah, so
you know, they just drown. They'll just sit
the
right on the bottom.
The object is to release this fish alive.
You'll actually feel them start to loosen up as you're holding on to him. I mean, they're as rigid as a board.
So you drag him along and he's just stiff like a board, and then what happens?
You'll start to actually feel his body and the tension start to loosen up a little bit. You know, it's basically the same thing as like taking a towel and letting it dry out in the sun. It's real rigid. You add a little bit of moisture to it and it becomes a little bit more pliable.
So
same way with that fish. You'll actually feel his body start to relax. He'll start to move a little bit. basically. It's a big word, but his body will actually start to reticulate.
Okay, because I was thinking we'd get down into the serpentine.
Yeah, serpentine.
Reticuline. That was good. I like reticuline. Thing. That's good. So, I'm more into the serpentine, but, you know.
They'll start to move around normal and start to get much more relaxed. And at that point, that's when that fish starts to kick a little bit more and you start to feel him start to get that life back into his whole body and rather than just his head region.
So now you're going to see him actually swim away. Correct. Not just
one hard kick and sink to the bottom.
Yeah. Exactly. If he just kind of veers off to the side and goes down, you did not do this correctly.
Correct.
Do we got music coming up?
We got music, yeah.
Okay, so I guess this is Fish and Frank in the chair for Outdoors This Week with Alex Langer, Robert in the chair across from me, and our guest Gary from Pure Fishing. And we'll be back. Yes, soon.
We got an East Coast and West Coast, Panhandle and Keys, Jimmy Buffett, alligators, and those big old cypress trees.
All right.
And we're back. You know, and we've been talking about tarpon, the big silver king, the other one. We're going to get away from the tarpon. We're going to wrap this up. Fish and Frank here, setting in for Outdoors This Week with Alex Langer. And we got Gary from Penn here. And, of course, the one and only Robert. We're going to get into a little more of that. Where were we with tarpon? We were down. We were holding them. They were acting like a wave because of all the acid buildup. They were real stiff. And yeah. How do we put a period on the end of that?
Basically, once you release them, then it's pretty much done. You're going on to the next fish. But the main reason why they show up here is for food and for breeding, in different times of year.
It's like me, food, drink.
Exactly.
Companionship, let's call it. Let's not call it sexual congress. Let's call it companionship.
There you go.
Hey, that's a good-looking girl tarpon over there.
Exactly.
I had to come back as a fish, I would have come back as a tarpon. I mean, they're nice-looking fish. I mean, geez, jump and do all that stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah, they look like a giant greenie.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks. Yeah. So I'm somehow or another, you say greeny, I keep thinking Martian, big eyes, round head, It's okay, we won't do anything about pen reps with that. But,
the thing is, those tarpon show up here at this time of year because of the abundance of food.
Well, actually, about 2-3 months ago.
Well, yeah. And then we've got so many other species that both show up at that time and other species that are leaving at that time. Charlotte Harbor is so versatile with the different varieties of fish.
Okay, Robert, tell us, what kind of fish come into Charlotte Harbor at this time of year? What are they?
The tarpon show up, and the critters that like to eat tarpon show up. Sharks. Lots of big sharks show up here, and a lot of those sharks are showing up here both the
We've
same
got
reason.
20-foot hammerheads out here. Unbelievable.
20-foot hammerheads.
14-foot.
500-pound bull sharks. 8-9-foot lemon sharks. Black tips galore. And a lot of small sharks. But
we got to do a show on black tips. Now, just to let you guys know, we're in Charlotte Harbor, Florida with fishandfranks.com. Remember, no G in Southern Fishing. It's fishing down here, fishinfranks.com. But we're going to be talking about, during different shows, fish from all over the country. We have Robert's from Arizona. I was from the Midwest. I finished high school in northern Wisconsin. Gary, where are you from?
I was born in Miami.
You're a cracker.
I am.
Wow.
Yep. Wow, real cracker on the show, first time, holy cow, our first radio show with Alex Langer's Outdoor This Week, and we get a real cracker on the show. That's too
nice.
Cool.
Yep.
Okay, so but you were actually Indiana, born in Indiana, learned to fish in Indiana, then went to Arizona, grew up high school and all that out there in Arizona, fishing out there, snake hunting and doing all that, and me being from the northern Midwest, Wisconsin, Illinois and all that, we're going to be doing shows from all over, including sometimes on how to fish in Europe. But to get to one of the reasons that we all live here is right here in Charlotte Harbor, we have freshwater fishing right across the street, literally. And there's bass, bluegills, shellcrackers, gar.
Crappie fishing in the wintertime is absolutely
shellcrackers. You go a few hours south, we got Oscars, peacock bass, wapotes. As you go north, there's all kinds of other freshwater fish. Big, nice largemouth bass fishing here. And then you come into Charlotte Harbor where we have the flats fishing with snook and redfish and trout and a ton of other fish in the canals. We've got sand bream, snook,
mangrove snapper,
Spanish mackerel during the course of the year. In the middle of the harbor, we have cobia, tarpon, sharks, more mackerel, spade fish, Boca Grande Pass, sharks, tarpon, grouper, snapper. And then you have the Gulf of Mexico, which as you get out, we've got a lot of nearshore reefs with snappers, grunts, groupers, all that. Then you get out, we got mahi-mahi, we've got even
blackfin tuna,
swordfish.
I mean, Southwest Florida's just kind of like real paradise.
Yeah, I live on the East Coast, and the interesting thing over here is that, you know, where I am, we're way more limited by the weather. You know, if the wind is really blowing, we usually don't go.
A little bit of intercoastal. We've got a lot of intercoastal, a lot of harbor.
Sure.
Going right out there. But you go 2 miles offshore there, and it's, 600 feet deep, 800 feet deep.
Yeah, you know, and they say that the area around the Lake Worth Pier is the deepest. It gets deepest the quickest. So it's about 100 feet per mile offshore. So if you go off 100, a mile, you're in 100 foot of water.
Out here, if you go out a mile, you're in 35 feet of water.
Right.
Gulf of Mexico is a big sand pit blown up by that meteor that hit, killed the dinosaurs off the Yucatan. That's how we got here. You know, I watched it happen. You know, I'm not that old where I actually, got to meet most of the dinosaurs, but I did get to meet, the ones that were killed right before the meteor hit. I was young at the time, but still, I was
there. Yeah.
Anyway, there's just so many different types of fish, and we've all traveled. I've fished most of Europe, Central America, most of North America, and we're going to be talking about all these fish from all over. So don't think this is a Southern show, although it might be just a little bit Southern. But
yeah, I mean, the versatility that we're going to be able to try to cover with all the different species throughout just the United States alone, and especially like in our own backyard.
Somebody told me there's something like walleye or something. It sounds like a cartoon. It doesn't even sound like a real fish, does it?
Right.
That'll get you guys going.
Yeah, that'll get somebody fired up.
All right. Fairbanks, Alaska. Well, hey. Hi.
Hi.
We get a lot of customers down here from Alaska because it really sucks up there in the winter. And it's really nice here. So yes. We wanted to make a special shout out to Fairbanks, Alaska, Phoenix, Arizona. And we're going to be trying to pick wherever you guys are at to tailor the fishing and the fishing reports to where you are. So as the music says, Robert in the chair across from me, I'm Fishing Frank here. This is Outdoors This Week with Alex Langer. But Alex is not here at the moment. We're going to be doing a show with Alex soon. Gary from Penn. Yay, Penn. We'll be back in a minute. Everything all right?
Everything is good here. You just have one more to go.
No problem.
You guys are great.
Okay, and we're back. And we've been talking about fish and what fish are available and what we're going to do. But one of the things that always every angler needs is good tackle. And Gary, we want to know your secrets. We want to know, does Penn have any secrets, anything special coming out this year? No comment?
Yeah, it's a little early.
ICAST is right around the corner, the big tackle show. And is Penn bringing out some cool new stuff this year?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we're, let's just say an icon gets reborn.
Right. You've got one of the reels you're doing a little tweaking to and making it nicer and better and a little more rugged, a little more durable. And
absolutely.
It's one of your antagonistic reels.
It is.
It is. So, okay, it I guess is. We can't go any further than that. You're no, not going to talk. No secrets from you, young man. I want to know your secrets.
Nope. Let's no, just say okay. Lighter, stronger, bad, better, yeah. Smoother.
Are you doing anything to the edge of the spools?
Spools? What are you talking about?
Okay, now, all right, okay. I guess no secrets from Gary.
No.
All right. Robert, do you have any secrets?
I have a lot of secrets.
You have a lot of secrets?
Do you have any secrets you can share on the air?
The iCast show is, for a lot of people don't know, is where all the tackle industry introduces all their new lures, rods, reels, lines, anything new for the year. So it's really pretty cool. The problem with it is that they introduce it and start advertising it 2 to 6 months before it's even available.
Okay, we're not busting anybody's chops in particular, but why? There's a question I've always wanted to know. Why do tackle companies bring out the advertising 6 months ahead of when the product hits the shelf?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, we try not to bring out our actual advertising until the product is ready to hit the shelves.
You can tell that to many other manufacturers.
Well, what happens is we debut the items at iCast, which is typically in July, and a typical cycle for the rods and reels, at least, if you're talking about durable items, as a manufacturer, is that your items are...
Well, of course we're talking about durable. We're talking pen, tough, durable, fishing, tackle, yes.
Yes, roger that. But when you're talking about rods and reels, generally they, you know, we debut them in July and August.
And that's so pretty when they come out.
Well, they always are.
You know, the debutante ball.
But they don't end up shipping until around September.
Yeah.
So what you see as far as advertising is all the riders and all the you know, the outdoor riders and things that are at iCast, they see it then, and they just can't help themselves. They can't wait till September. So they start throwing it out there for the public to see, and the product is not ready yet, generally. Okay. So.
But anyway, you guys got some great products out. I tell you what, the Spinfisher and Liveliner series, the Liveliner is just, you know, unbelievable for big fish. That unbelievable lower extra drag on it. Normal reels have a set of drag washers up at the top right underneath the drag cap. And we're used to that. They generate in a small reel 3 to 8 pounds. You know, a bigger reel can get up 16, 18 pounds. Mm-hmm. But pen goes almost up to 30 pounds. I could never figure out why I would even want it. I'm sitting there looking at this thing going, well, this is about as useless of a add-on as I could ever think of. And then it dawned on me, with most reels, all other brands except one, they can generate maybe 16, 18 pounds, which is, I only use maybe 13 even fighting a big fish. That's a lot of pressure.
Absolutely.
But what I did discover was the Spinfisher drags, I am not at the end of my drag fighting these big fish. I'm in the middle of the drag setting. And it's amazing because it's so much smoother, it's so much better. You don't get the heat buildups, and the drag works better. If you're crushed down and locked down,
you know, nobody
versus right in the middle.
Absolutely.
It's because literally when it first came out, I'm like, are you kidding me? What the heck is this? It'll rip the rod out of your hand.
It will. But it's like driving a car. You know, you don't drive your car redlined. You know, you want to run your car, you know, at a reasonable RPM, and it's the same with the drags. You know, just because you have the capacity to do these giant drag numbers, we're not telling you should, because you really
and
can't.
It's even impossible to use, but so much better running in that middle of the drag.
Just
and
a much more proficient, smoother drag throughout the entire fight, rather than it starting to heat up and get that barking or just a flat-out lock up for a second.
Oh, yeah. There's one major overseas one that the only ones we ever see melted. I mean, melted down. We're not going to say their name right now. Who knows? They might want to sponsor the show someday, and if they don't, I'll be telling you their name right away. But
you got to keep all your avenues open.
Yeah,
I got to
keep open. You never know.
You don't burn bridges.
You don't. I do every day. I just can't keep my mouth shut. I can't help it.
But drag's all, it's all surface area. You know, it's all surface area.
And
so
materials.
If you have a larger drag.
I am going to say materials and surface area.
Sure.
Definitely.
Now, what materials are you guys doing in those drags?
We have a number we call it. I can't tell you what it's really made out of. But it's a carbon fiber material.
Yeah.
And we have really two flavors, basically.
Nice and thick, really nice drags. Now, people, when they're fighting these little crappies and the walleye and this other stuff, because we do a lot of crappie fishing here, but when you're fighting this fish and you're using that very, very light line, to me, the drag is even more important, way more important than on a big fish, because a big fish, I'm looking for a lockup. And on that little one, I need that little bit of a release just so when he has that paper mouth, he does not pull the hook.
Absolutely. Especially on the startup. You know, you need to have a drag that is smooth right out of the box because, you know, and when the fish runs.
Low pressure drag is tough.
It's very tough.
Really tough to get a thing. And you guys use a clutch cap method where if you turn the cap of the drag just like a quarter turn, because humans don't turn in 64ths, they turn like quarter and eighths. So when you turn it that quarter turn, it's only moving a 64th down on the drag. It's a slip clutch.
Yeah, it depends on the reel, but okay. We try to make a lot of range to the drag.
I think we got one more segment coming up, but